If you've been listening to the show for the past 6 months, you've been hearing me talk about a personal project I'm doing that I was going to launch on Kickstarter called the Drifting Moon Tarot. It's a tarot deck and it is live on Kickstarter right now. It is currently up and I just wanted to make that announcement. A tarot deck is a deck of cards that each card has a different theme. And my job as an illustrator was to figure out the stories and the symbols and the meanings behind these cards and the different themes. And so it was a really fun, almost like a narrative kind of project, but applying it to a deck of cards. And so I'd love for you guys to go check those out on Kickstarter. We do have a link in the show notes here on this episode. And you could also go to Kickstarter and just look up Drifting Moon Tarot. As you know, us here at 3 Point Perspective, we are very big on artists making projects that they are passionate about. And the only way these projects work is if you guys support them. We love the idea of taking a little bit of power away from the big companies and giving it back to the artists. And that's what these things are. That's what this project is for me. It took the last 6 months off of commercial work just to do this project. And so I would love to ask for your support and your help. And if you like the project, share it around. I would really, really appreciate it. Okay. Thank you.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to 3 Point Perspective, the podcast about illustration, how to do it, how to make a living at it, and how to make an impact in the world with your art. I'm Jake Parker.
And I'm Will Terry. And Lee White is out on assignment today, but today we are interviewing Mesa Schumacher.
Yes, this was such a great interview because we haven't ever gone deep on
Divin.
The subject of like medical illustration, that whole world of like very representational, like scientific illustration stuff. And wow, I feel like we lucked out having her contact us to call us out and say, you guys are neglecting this subject. And she didn't want to come on the, I mean, she wasn't emailing to come on to the show, but I was like, we have to have her on. We got to talk to her. And so, yeah, she is, Mesa Schumacher is a professional like science illustrator. And you go check out her website, mesaschumacher.com. And you'll see she has medical art, like science, microbiology art, animal art, all different, you know, fish, mammals.
All kinds of cutaways of brains and hearts
It's so impressive. Yeah. And so this is a great interview. What was like one of your main takeaways from this interview?
Having had a teacher at in my art school, mm-hmm. who was a medical illustrator, I knew a lot about the field, mm-hmm. and she confirmed a lot of things that I had learned along the way. Mm-hmm. But how prolific she is and what a great living you can make mm-hmm. doing this probably mm-hmm. stuck out for me, because I always think about it in terms of the listener. And I think a lot of our listeners are trying to figure out how they can have a career in art. And this is definitely a way to do it.
Yeah. Well, and the thing is anytime you have a need for something and not enough, or a demand for something and not enough people there to fill it, mm-hmm. you're gonna be in a good spot if you're a person that can supply, you know, that demand, right? Yeah. And medical illustration is an area, or science illustration is an area, where there's a lot of need, and there's more and more so every year. And if you're able to do anything in that regard, you're gonna be a very busy illustrator. So mm-hmm. It's cool. I got nothing else here. Let's just move right in. Let's move right into this interview.
Let's get on it.
All right, Mesa, nice to have you joining us here. This is great for you to come onto the podcast. And I got to say, we got an email from you, and it was you taking issue or maybe a little bit umbrage or something with a certain perspective or a point of view on.
Let's face it. It was Lee.
Okay, it was mostly Lee, right?
It was mostly Lee. To be fair, yeah.
So, do you want to? We'll just start off with tell us who you are, what you do, where you're located, and then we'll get into let's talk about sort of what your email was saying.
Yeah. So I guess I'm here to defend the honor, I guess, of science and medical artists. Mm-hmm. I'm Mesa Schumacher. I'm currently in Fiji. I've been living here for a little bit, and I'm going to be living here for a few years more. But I'm mm-hmm. from Seattle, and I kind of call Seattle and Washington, D.C. home bases when I'm in the U.S. And I've been a science artist for about 15 years. And that has ranged from working in museums and aquariums, zoos, to hospitals, doing surgical manuals, to 3D animation, 2D animation for patient education, puzzles, educational board games, signs, reconstructions, stuff in ZBrush, paleo art, archaeological art. It just anything that has to do with science and visualizing it.
Yeah.
I've been really lucky to have my toe in a lot of it.
I got to say, go ahead.
I was just going to say, Lee originally said was it was boring. And that's where I was like yelling at my
boring
phone. No, it's so exciting.
I was just going to butt in really quick. I want people to go to your website, mesaschumacher.com, and it's MESASCHUMACHER, Schumacher. And your website is a just a dang good like website for for the amount of different kinds of illustration that you do. It's organized really well. But you've got great art, you've got great presentation, and so if you guys pause this, or if you're if you can want to look at something while you're listening, just go scroll through that website and get a good idea of what you're doing here. It's just you're a really great illustrator, that's for sure. So your email, I want to read just a section of it. It says here, I like the podcast. You guys are great, whatever. and she said, I realize this isn't really a question, maybe more of an accusation. Maybe it's a public service announcement. Anyhow, a few times throughout the years, I've heard you guys disparage work in scientific and medical illustration, dental whiteboard videos in your most recent episode with Cam Kendall. And I remember an episode a while back with Lee talking about a fellow student doing museum illustration. So boring, right? No way. Totally disagree, but I realize that is part of the problem. People just don't know. So I got to say, with the Cam thing too, it did sound like, he had to slum it and do, dentist illustrations for a while until he got to the...
Not all dental whiteboard videos are going to be the most exciting thing ever.
Right.
Not every dog is the most exciting thing ever.
Right. But you really did call out Lee White. And I got to say...
And I noticed he hasn't shown up.
Yeah, so
he's smart. He's smart.
He's smart. He's away on assignment for today, and maybe he'll want to come on later and defend himself or something. But I want to say my experience with this is I actually worked in a museum the early years of my career. Yeah, the Arizona Museum of Natural History. Is the current title of it. Back then, 20 years ago, it was called the Mesa Southwest Museum. And they had built this giant dinosaur wing addition to it. And it was all like Arizona-based prehistoric animals and more. And they needed they had a couple of muralists, and they just needed an assistant. I was young and I was learning. And so there's a few paintings on the wall of prehistoric animals that I've done that are iffy, but it was a huge learning experience. And that's when I was like, dang, this could be a track for an illustrator. It wasn't entirely for me because, I had my heart set on comics and storytelling stuff, but I love dipping my toe into that world. And so I just want to, frame this as where I'm coming from. But I want to hear, what's your defense of why it's not a boring job, it's not a boring path, and tell us kind of what you're thinking there.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned storytelling, you know, mm-hmm. and you guys are all about storytelling, and that's kind of how I found you. I don't really know. I don't remember at this point if I found your podcast first or SDS.
Okay.
But I found you because I was interested in doing some children's book projects myself. So mm-hmm. I was kind of trying to fill in some art holes, I guess. I didn't go to art school. So I have a very okay. cobbled together education. I feel like I missed some stuff, you know, along the way. Mm-hmm. So that's been really helpful. So thank you guys for, you know, for your service there.
Filling in the gaps.
Yeah. And I think that's actually pretty typical of a lot of science artists. Mm-hmm. Some people come from the art side and they've been to art school and they just didn't quite fit in a different mm-hmm. place. And then they found this, and this was kind of their calling. You know, mm-hmm. and I kind of came from the science side. I was kind of on a science track, and then I discovered that this was a career, and I immediately dropped everything else to pursue it because I felt like, oh my gosh, this is what I've actually been doing with my life for 22 years or whatever. And now I actually realize you can make money off of it, and so that's what I'll be doing for the rest of my time on Earth. Mm-hmm. But it's science art is basically anything that explains science. And that can be, you know, anything from technical illustrations showing how you put things together to, you know, massive murals, like you're talking about, with paleontological reconstructions, and to animation of cells and molecules flying around and what they do, to teaching surgeons how to do a surgery. Through illustration, which is still pretty important, and there's so many different little niches to a lot of kind of more naturalist work to actually in comics. There's a whole world of medicine comics. There's a conference called Graphic Medicine, and there's all these, you know, there's this whole world of comic artists who function in the space of either healthcare workers or patients going through diseases, and they're you know, expressing their journeys through usually autobiographical comics in that realm. But so it's a really broad tent, and there's kind of a lot of room to maneuver within it into the places that people like. And I fell in love with it because I feel like I love science. I love learning about things. I love digging into things. But what I really loved was taking all this stuff, kind of throwing it into a pot, and then trying to explain it and pull out stories and tell those stories of science in a way that people could understand, whoever my audience was, whether my audience was someone really technical or someone really layperson. So, it's been really fun doing that. And I'm pretty broad. I'm a real generalist. I'm a freelancer, and I started freelancing in college as soon as I realized what this was. So I started, I'd go to my science professors and I would say, I'll do one illustration for you and you teach me how to do this. And then next one, you're going to pay me. And so that was how I first started. Then I kind of got my first jobs that way and got my foot into some stuff and started a freelance business. And then I went on to go and do some internships at museums, at National Geographic, and kind of built my network out. And then I went back to grad school to specialize in medical illustration. It's a little bit more, it is just a little bit more specialization. You need to know more about medicine. So I went to a master's program in Johns Hopkins Medical School. So you're like in there with the doctor or the future doctors, doing anatomy lab with them. And you spend a whole year going to surgeries and drawing kind of over the surgeon's back. So, before we got on here, Jake was asking, are you in the hospital? I'm not in the hospital. I'm in my house, but there's a lot of medical illustrators who work embedded in hospitals. So if you're going into surgery, there may be an artist in there while you're asleep drawing, you know, your pancreas.
Oh, wow.
So you probably meet them before you go to sleep. Usually like you come in before, so they know,
they'll just sneak in there.
But we're in weird places.
So did you ever take any zoology or anatomy, like human anatomy?
I've actually been really lucky on that front. So I was kind of an art kid. I did mm-hmm. a lot of art growing up, but I also did a lot of biology. And I didn't really have consistent art mentors. I had a couple people say, oh, you should get a portfolio together and go to art school. But I didn't really feel like I had anything to say. Mm-hmm. Like I had a voice, you know?
Right.
I don't know if anyone else out there is having that problem, but it's pretty, I don't know. I've always
so like for you, it was more so, like, like, I just want to make interest or like, I just want to make images.
At that point, it was like, I just want to draw what I see. Like I was very drawn to like observational drawing and sketching. Mm-hmm. And, though I did do a lot of comicking in my mm-hmm. notes, I comicked all my notes. So I'd have like, you know, blank pages. And then I do kind of Larry Gonick style explainer comics mm-hmm. for all my high school classes. So I went off to college, and I thought I was going to do biology or pre-med or something, and started BioCorps. And immediately as a freshman, I was miserable kind of. And it just, I went to, you know, university that had a really weeder out program. And, I wasn't sure about what I was doing, and it just felt like I'm way too flitty to do a PhD and commit mm-hmm. 7 years of my life to something really tiny and specific. And I'm not sure I want to be a doctor in this current age. And so I kept kind of changing my major to less and less intense things, from like biology to human biology to anthropology, like read less credits. Mm-hmm. So more exploration. And then halfway through college, I applied for a scholarship to go to South America and work on a dig site, an archaeological site. And I got it. So I went down there for the summer, and it was awesome. But besides all the fun running around and, you know, digging and crawling through caves and stuff that we got to do, in the evenings, they had us draw artifacts. Mm-hmm. And so I was given, you know, like we had a lot of obsidian points. So like arrowhead type things or spearheads mm-hmm. or knives that you would make out of this really that shiny kind of black rock you may have seen. Yeah. And my professor was saying, you know, well, the best way to represent these things is pen and ink still. Because mm-hmm. you try to photograph them and they just refract light everywhere.
Right.
Can't get a good photograph. Same thing if you try to scan them. In 3D, it's just hard. Mm-hmm. And you can't take them out of the country because treaties and mm-hmm. laws. Mm-hmm. So we're going to do this in pen and ink, and you have to measure it precisely, but you also have to know how it was made, because you have mm-hmm. to see where it started, and then you work out from there. And then every mark that you make on the page is telling you something about directional hit, is telling you something about, you know, the depth of that. And I was like, whoa, this is information that I'm drawing that someone's going to use across the world to study this thing. And he was like, and this is a job. Mm. And I was like, oh, well, that's going to be my job. and that's, you know, that's one of the more basic things one can tell, I guess. But I was just so amazed at how much information you could pack into an image, and information mm-hmm. that could be like extracted elsewhere. It's almost like this like code, you know? Mm-hmm. And I thought that was really cool. I do a lot less of that now. You know, I do a lot more like storytelling in my images. Mm-hmm. I kind of think of that as like first level images, like what you see in a void. And then like you get into like placing things in environments and time, and then like connecting them to each other. And then, you know, adding all on top of that, the why do we care of it all? And the emotional connection to the human viewing it and everything. Mm-hmm. But it's kind of, I mean, people would be surprised, I think, how similar those concepts are to when you're telling a story about people or about animals or, you know, like, mm-hmm. you know, for popular culture. Mm-hmm. It's you're using a lot of the same tools and tricks to get people tuned in and invested in your work and caring about what they're looking at.
I've been, all of us have been to the doctor's office, and I seen the diagrams and cutaways of certain parts of the body and things like that. And I noticed on your website, you have a lot of that. That's just like one of the things that you do. Because like you said, you do a lot of different things. But one of the things I've always been curious of is what, when you work with an art director or with the doctors or scientists, there's a lot of imagination that has to take place in order to draw those things. Because you don't have a drawing to start with. You know, or maybe you do have other, do you ever look at other medical illustrators' work? How does that, can you talk about that process a little bit?
I realized I skirted a little bit around your question, which is I did do a couple anatomy labs, both like dissection of animals. And then also I've done numerous cadaver dissections in medical schools.
Wow.
So, just like you would, if you were training to be a doctor, going through couple months of dissecting a human body and learning about everything, memorizing everything, going through the same process as the med students, and then naming it off very fast, which is a pretty intense experience, but also, I mean, artistically really, really valuable. We'd go and we'd dissect in the mornings for a couple hours, and then as students in grad school, we'd go back and we'd draw the anatomy sketch all afternoon from what we'd drawn that day. So in scrubs and just, you know, looking at the anatomy, making sure we know where everything is. So there's a base there. And then the other kind of important thing that you learn over time is how to represent form that's not there. Because a lot of the stuff you're drawing is stuff you can't see, right?
Right.
Molecules. Mm-hmm. Dead animals, things inside the human body that you can't photograph. And even if you dissect or you were able to open up and photograph someone, a lot of the stuff looks the same. It's all the same color, or, you know, and that's where illustration comes in. You know, even right. if you're looking at pictures that neurosurgeons are taking as they start to go into someone's brain, a lot of the stuff is just all the same color. And there's, you know, fluids everywhere, and they have to know exactly where everything is. So having someone do an artistic representation of that and really get that correct is important. So it's a combination of a lot of anatomical knowledge and experience, good references. So I don't have all my books here because I just moved in, but lots of good reference from people who've gone before and done good dissections and knowing where those references can be found. And then also relying and working with experts like you would work with an art director.
Mm-hmm.
And the difference is sometimes you're kind of leading the process because you're the person who has, you know, the artistic knowledge. So you're kind of, you have to draw out of them what you need from them in a way. Whereas like when I work with an art director, you know, they'll take the stuff, they'll come back and like, they really have their checklist down. Right. they sometimes have more than enough to say about how I should improve something. Huh. But, when you're working with scientists, sometimes, you know, it's their first time working with an artist, or sometimes they just don't know how to exactly say what they want to say. So it's kind of, I guess, it's often my job to go in and say, well, you know, I'm trying to do this, but how's this working for you? Let's talk about the anatomy. You know, are you seeing anything that's jumping out at you? How's this working? How's that working? Going through everything. And then if they're, you know, catching on something that's not working, really, really digging into that critique and trying to like make them feel comfortable to have that space to. So it's really like, it's illustration, but it's also kind of like being a bridge between the science world, which is often very convoluted and jargony, and someone else. And that person might be a patient who has no idea how their body works.
Mm-hmm.
Or so it might be someone else who does, you know, and it really depends. Like then you have to make visual choices on who's your audience and how are they best going to receive that. So am I going to go with a comic style that's very simplified, or am I going to go with something that's like those images you see in the doctor's office that's very, very, very detailed and very accurate.
Mm-hmm. Clinical.
Yeah. Or, you know, it could be something else.
go ahead, Will.
I would imagine that you'd have a lot of respect from the people that you work with because they can't do what you can do.
when we're lucky. Yeah. It's actually, it's really interesting, you know, working with different types of people, you know, plastic surgeons always want to be artists.
Oh, really?
They always want to tell you about how they took art in college and like their art classes on the side because they're very visual, you know, they like, I don't think I've like ever met a plastic surgeon that didn't want to be an artist. And then, you know,
so they have respect for you. Cause you're like, they're like, oh, that could have been me.
Yeah. Well, they appreciate the aesthetics that are, that like the work that goes into the creation of that. Right. And often they're, you know, they've practiced art before. So yeah. Some people are a little less, some people are a little less knowledgeable about what it takes to make an image. You kind of have to educate them about it. So always going in with kind of an open mind is good. And
you've been doing this how long? Did you say?
I started in my dorm room about 15 years ago. I'm 36 now. So I started in college and I've been doing it on and off, like continuously kind of during that whole time, but I did a lot of other jobs in the beginning to supplement. And now I've been doing it full time. I finished grad school about 7 years ago. So since then I've been full time freelance all the time.
And how many, like, I have two questions. First, how much of that is like digital? Can you work traditionally? Is there a preference? Does it matter? Is it just, easier to work digital or is it easier to work traditional?
Yeah. I work almost 100% digitally now. Mm-hmm. I mean, I like to scan in a lot of textures. So I'll do like ink textures and print textures and watercolor and stuff. And I'll incorporate those. But realistically, just the amount of changes and sometimes the amount of layers that we'll work with if we're working on something really complicated. It kind of depends on the job. I just digital is just, you know, it's important for changes and edits and edits and edits and edits, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. It can be fast, you know? So, I like to do traditional when I can, you know, I love it, but I mean, similar to other industries, it's just like hours that you bench hours that you can't get back.
So now you're working full time or you've been working full time. How many, like, what does that look like? Is it an illustration a week? Is it, 12 jobs a year? Is it 50 jobs a year? What is that?
I think last year, I just did my finances, I guess. I did like 120 invoices.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
So, but it's a lot of, like right now I've got, I'll just look at my list. I've got some website images. I've got some medical education ongoing. I'm doing a neurology textbook. I'm working on 3 Nat Geo projects. I work with them as a researcher, but then sometimes I like draw the anatomy on those big spreads that you pull out for the magazine. I'm doing.
What does that mean to work for them as a researcher?
That's I'll finish this and then I'll tell you that because that's a big question. I'm doing something for Pfizer. I'm doing a couple storyboards for like medical pharma animations and interactives that they do to convey the efficacy of their drugs or devices to their clients or investors or patients. Sometimes one of them is a patient thing. I'm doing a 3D animation about some cellular stuff, 2 editorial science, popular like magazine things to go out next month, and a bunch of science for the zoo in DC. And some anatomy puzzles and a science game, like board game.
You are busy.
I think that's my deck right now. Yeah. Wow. It's a very busy. It's a busy life. So it's, that varies. Some people work like primarily for one client or 2 clients. I'm pretty varied and I like the, you know.
So you're definitely, you're on someone's list where they're like, oh, we need something. Let's call Mesa. She's the girl for this. Like,
I have some clients I've worked with for a long time.
So
they come back and they need me.
I'm curious, what is researching for National Geographic? What does that look like?
Yeah. That's one of my favorite things to do, even though I don't always get to do the art. I usually don't get to do the art. But it's kind of like the other cool thing about this career is you kind of get to have a toe in infographic world. Mm-hmm. And, so you get to work with infographic designers and data and just kind of bringing data into visual form. Yeah. So I've been working with them since I did an internship there basically a graphics assistant, years ago, almost 10 years ago. And, now what they'll do is they'll come to me and they'll be like, okay, one of the editors will bring me on as their kind of research assistant. And that will mean they'll say like pterosaurs, go some sort of spread. And so then, And so sometimes it's like, okay, we're going to do one page on, you know, octopus and we kind of want to focus on this, but like you give us a couple pitches for ideas and we'll see what you come up with. And sometimes it's very defined and they just need like a little help with a couple things, but often it's like, okay, pterosaurs go. So then I go and I read the literature and I find out who knows things about pterosaurs and who are the pterosaur experts working today and what are the big issues in this field and what has been published before and what hasn't and what's cool about them and what might people be interested in. And then I'll dig up something like, okay, well, pterosaur, what do you guys know about pterosaurs?
That is nothing. First off, that is like the coolest. That you got me like excited.
That was a really cool one.
Yeah. What do I know about pterosaurs? I know that they're everywhere. First off, they're not dinosaurs, they're reptiles. They are very tiny, to the like giraffe sized.
Yeah. Look at you.
Yeah. They mostly, I want to say they're mostly like water, like they like to hang out next to the water, right? There weren't very many land-based pterosaurs, maybe? I don't know.
Pretty well.
Okay. And they
That's like 2 out of 3.
All right. And they had feathers?
Yeah. Yeah.
Some kind of...
Or proto-feathers,
furry,
kind of.
Yeah, furry feather things. Yeah, you're talking to like a guy who likes prehistoric.
Clearly someone who likes prehistoric animals.
Yes. I do. But I was on your website looking at the spread, the National Geographic spread with the pterosaurs on it. And so looking at that, is that something where you're like how much of that is you and how much of it is, you know, the National Geographic art team or whatever?
Me. That artistically, that's the painting is by Fernando Bautista, who works. Mm-hmm. He's a senior graphics editor there, who I worked with when I was there. But I've worked with him on a lot of projects, and he's a fantastic. you guys should look him up.
He's an amazing
artist.
I've been a subscriber to National Geographic for like 25, 30 years now. So
he's been there for 15 years now. And
he's good.
He's from País Vasco in Spain. He's Basque. Mm-hmm. And he's kind of a similar background to me. He did reconstructions and freelance for years, but then he was also an infographics professor in Spain for some years. And he did the painting there. Mm-hmm. Okay. I did a lot of the anatomy on that one. So like the bones and things that are overlaid. I did, cheat sheets for him. So I mocked that all up and I worked out the anatomy and I checked that with all the experts. So what I do there is they say pterosaurs go, and I go and do a bunch of research and I come back to them with a big research packet that's like visual and scientific and experts that I plan to talk to and pitches for stories that we could tell. So one of those stories is pterosaurs are really variable. They're really tiny. They're giant. In fact, they're the largest things that have ever flown on Earth. Birds can't get that big. Mammals can't get that big. How do they do it? The government is really interested. And they're looking into this. So the engineering of it, the bioengineering, very cool. Pterosaurs, maybe people think they're kind of a failure species. or, you know, group of animals because they died off. But actually, they were so variable and they lived about as long as birds have been on Earth. So like they stretched millions and millions and millions of years. They stuck around for
so that is a success.
So they're very successful and they lived everywhere. It wasn't just near water. They lived everywhere, all sorts of environments. So they basically took over the world and lived in it for many, many years. And so we wanted to show that. And then we wanted to show some of the weird and anatomy things that changed over time. Like they all lost their teeth at some point and they just decided we don't need teeth anymore. Mm. And, teeth were gone completely. Nobody knows why.
Maybe there was a shortage of dentists. So
that's such a dad joke. Good one, Will.
Yeah. So just like these different things, what are people going to be interested in? And then how are you going to tell that story? Like, how do you connect it to humans? So we have the human flying there. We have the human anatomy and a bird. I'm thinking about it in my head, but we have a giant pterosaur and then we have a couple of smaller pterosaurs flying.
You have a bat, a bird, a human, and then a bunch of pterosaurs, which that's such a smart thing. Like here's all the creatures that, that fly, like let's put them together.
And we wanted to show how they do it differently. Because pterosaurs do it completely differently than birds, and birds do it completely differently than bats. And there's three strategies that are being employed here to take to the air and to kind of tell that story. So we start to, you know, move things around on the page and start to kind of block in what sort of text we're going to have. And then we've got a timeline on the bottom. So we want to show that that stretch, and we're moving all these things around and all these kind of puzzle pieces are getting fit together. But then you kind of have to take the body text of the graphic and make it all flow. So you're kind of having this story that's being told throughout and you're hitting all the points you want to hit. So it's really months and months and hundreds of hours of work on the part of many people coming together. But it's one of my favorite things to work on because it's just so many awesome people and so much dedication to each one of these pieces. Even if I'm not getting to draw the final art, it's just really cool to be involved with and to like get to help craft that story. So
That's so cool. That's
a like, long answer.
No, and I'm glad you're like, well, we need to, this is a detailed answer because I look at these, the spreads in National Geographic are like my favorite, regardless if they're animals or if they're, you know, environmental or whatever. It's just, I like the information. I'm very much visual, obviously. Yeah. I'm a visual learner. So if I could see a timeline or I could see a graph or something like that, it just like click so much easier. So that's cool. And then you mentioned 3D. How much 3D work do you do? Like how much of that is a part of your like illustration? What program do you use? And do you feel like it's absolutely necessary or it's a nice to have, or, you know, you're fiddling around with it, or is it like absolutely essential?
It really depends. I think a lot of people get away without it completely. Mm-hmm. I do a fair bit of it. I use my main tools are Cinema 4D and ZBrush.
Okay.
And I do 3D animation. So I'll just like someone will come in and I'll do a 3D animation and send it off.
Oh, okay. And so you already have all the they already have the components there for you and you could just
I make them.
Okay.
Make them. Or I gather them. So like,
okay, right, like, I get it. Yeah.
Well, medical is actually really cool because you can take, you know, like you go to the doctor, you get a CT scan, you get an MRI, you can take that data. That's 3D data. You take it. It's a DICOM file. You can export it as an OBJ or an STL, clean it up in MeshLab, run it through ZBrush, get rid of all the noise, change it around, segment it into different anatomical parts, and you have an anatomically accurate model.
Wow.
Of like the chest cavity. It's really, really, so like a lot of the stuff, you know, I don't do it as much anymore, but at the beginning of my career in medical, I just spent a lot of time like extracting and trying to create models of anatomy. So I have kind of a library. There's a lot online now too. It keeps growing all the time because like people are aware of this trick. But so there's some of it's that and some of it's just modeling from scratch. And some of it's getting assets online. Since I'm working with scientists, you know, and I'm not like in the entertainment industry so much, it often has to be more accurate than a lot of the stuff that's out there. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that'll be built into the price. Like, okay. And it all depends on your client though. It's like, is this for patients and it's like a little simpler, or is it this for, who's it for and what are right. their needs is always,
yeah.
And if their needs are really anatomically accurate, either we're going to buy one of the models that is now built. It's like, you know, by medical artists who mm-hmm. are ensuring its accuracy, or we're going to take some anatomy and I'm going to like make a uterus that is mm-hmm. accurate and we're going to do stuff to it. You know,
right. so it's, cross section.
It's,
kind of
like, it's not. Yeah. See, it's not boring. Like it's always right. something quite interesting.
Yeah, it seems like every right every illustration assignment is like a little bit different. If you have yeah. any sort of attention deficit problem, this is like mm-hmm. you know, perfect for you, right? Like
that's my public service announcement. It's like not for everybody, but for the right type of crazy.
Yeah,
perfect. And that leads me into my next question, which is, I'm guessing you're not squeamish at seeing blood and stuff like that, but for the artist that is, you on your website you have a lot of animals and things like that that aren't dissections and things like that. Do you think that there's in the museum area, is there enough work that someone could make a career not doing the whole gamut of what you do, but you know, doing anthropological art and things like that?
Yeah, paleo yeah. art or something like that.
You know, there's a lot. There's a lot in paleo and archaeological. It's hard to make a living in the U.S. Mm-hmm. There's much more mm-hmm. of a tradition of it in Europe. And actually, mm-hmm. when I worked in archaeological art, most of my work was in Europe. I did 3 summer seasons in Turkey, and mm-hmm. I did a bit in Belize and some in Portugal. And then I've done some remote, but I went at those times. I went like right after college, I got a couple jobs and they didn't pay very much, but it was great anyways. And I would go live on the site for a couple months and just draw finds, artifacts that came out, and then also reconstruct things like buildings and burials and stuff like that. And that's that museums have a lot of that. Sort of thing. There's a lot of interpretation, so interpretive design for signs and exhibits. There's a lot of people working in, you know, in murals and in models, and a lot of modeling uses ZBrush now. They'll start with that you know, start digitally and then kind of go to the physical model if they're going to do that. I would say it's less in museums and things now than it is. There's just so much online education that there's so much room in my field for more people. Mm-hmm. And some of that's just science is publishing all the time. You know, mm-hmm. it's not everyone's seeing it, but there's this totally undertapped resource of potential clients in science. Mm-hmm. They're publishing all the time. They have manuscripts going out all the time, and they aren't always the best at figures. Or there's a huge industry now in visual abstracts, which are kind of trying to, it's like simplifying your paper to get it noticed mm-hmm. and understood in a simplified way visually. It's a great idea. And people have really been catching on because they've done studies and they show that engagement and readership goes up through the roof when you do a visual abstract, mm-hmm. obviously.
Yeah.
I don't think that's surprising to anyone here, but, and videos too, they're doing like more explainer videos. There's so much space now that the mm-hmm. internet is here that like these niches, I guess, for science artists, are expanding, but it's not so much, I like to tell people, I guess it's not so much you're going to go and just draw artifacts or you're going to go and draw specimens anymore. That's like mm-hmm. level one. You mm-hmm. you do that first and you learn how to do that and you learn how to like show light on form and make it realistic and then how to, you know, simplify that also, if you want to tell a simpler story. And then once you gain all those tools in your toolbox, like you do in any other art world, then you move forward and you move into like the levels of interpretation and storytelling that go on top of that. And then you can be, you know, you can do explainer videos, or you can do 3D animation, or you can do building giant things for medical booths as they go and they learn about, like, I know one studio in my industry built a giant like pulsating tumor that people would go into in this medical convention. Wow. And they would go in and there's like all this video media and stuff. And it's just like insanity. I don't know. So there's like a lot of studios, they get to do big group projects like that. So I don't get to do so much of that. I get to do some of the storyboarding. Sometimes I'll like contract for them doing storyboard or concepting work, but it's not, and it's akin to what you would do in storyboarding or concepting in general illustration. Mm-hmm. Just medically themed. You're still like, you know, making your characters, seeing what they're going to look like, doing like color comps and, you know, going through that whole process. And and then there's a lot of non-medical work. Just medical is kind of the top of the heap in terms of pay and employment, I would say. Mm-hmm. I had an interest anyways, but it definitely, my life got easier after I went to medical illustration grad school than it was before. But so, there's jobs outside of that. And a lot in, I guess I should say also a lot in science editorial. Mm-hmm. A lot of people end up there.
So like, what's the range for like a medical job and pay? Like, I understand there's budgets there. I know Will did like a children's book for what was
Merck.
For Merck, and it was like the paycheck you got was pretty impressive for that. But massive. I'm just curious, like
the it's funny. This was my next question too. I would imagine you do really well.
I do pretty well. Yeah. I mean, I'll be honest. Before grad school, I was I was doing it part time, and I was like bartending and waitressing. While I got my skills up, and I was also like, you know, I was doing, you know, the kind of classic young artist thing and like, go do my internship, take my bike with my stuff on my back. And then afterward, I'd bike to the bar and work all night. And then I'd go home and I'd work on my freelance. And then I'd, you know, pass out for a few hours. And then I'd get back on the bike and like did that for a couple of years. Before then, I was really scraping by with like, I think the first year I felt like I made it. I think I made $35,000. And that was the year I was like, I'm 100% supporting myself in art.
Yay.
But since grad school, I've been pulling in six figures as a freelancer. So yeah,
that's really good.
It's been good. Yeah. I can do this for the rest of my life. I'll be happy. Mm-hmm. Some institutional jobs run a little bit lower, but like a medical artist coming out of grad school is probably going to jump in at high 60s to 80s.
Mm-hmm. Is that like freelance?
No, that's a institutional.
Oh, working employed.
Like in a hospital. It's good money. It's a small field. Natural science runs a bit lower. And I have seen some university things for much lower, more like what I was making before grad school.
Mm-hmm. But after coming out of grad school.
Very well.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I was saying, you said coming out of grad school. So is there a master's degree for medical illustration?
Yeah. Oh, wow. In North America, there's four schools. There's there's one at Johns Hopkins in Baltimore. There's one in Georgia. They keep changing their name, but I think they're currently Regents. I might be wrong about that. And then there's one in Chicago and one in Toronto. And then there's a couple programs in Europe that are a little shorter. All the ones in the US and Toronto are 2 years of pretty much just 100% of the time doing art. Sleep in the studio style art school. And it's kind of a mix of art. You have, at least the one I went to, it's a very small program. There's seven of us in my class, and you kind of just move with your class through a series of project-based courses. First, kind of hammering down fundamentals. So like, you know, watercolor and atlas and grayscale project mm-hmm. coupled with biological and, you know, patient education, Adobe Illustrator, vector art, you know, and just making sure everyone's kind of up to speed, but at the same time, kind of throwing projects at you overlapping. So you're starting to get the flow of what your life is going to be like mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. how you can handle that. And then you also learn 2D and 3D animation. And then once you've kind of gone through your first year, hopefully they've kind of got you a little bit up to speed on all the art stuff you may not have gotten previously. And the general categories of illustration you might be going into. And then you start a thesis project. And then at Hopkins, we did a year of a good surgical as well, where I did, you know, you get up early in the morning, you put on your scrubs, you go in and you see a couple surgeries and you do sketches. And then you take them back to your studio and you go through them and you find it's almost like doing a comic strip. Like, what mm-hmm. are the action moments? You know, mm-hmm. and surgery strangely is like a video game. It's because surgeons, and they always say surgeons are so good at video games, like the best surgeons are great at video
hand
games.
Hand-eye coordination and yeah.
That, but also it's like levels. Surgeons are all about framing and levels. So they're like, okay, I'm starting my brain surgery. I'm going to go in here and I have to do this. And then I have to clear the field and clean it all up until I get to the next level. And then when you're done with that first step, you can find the anatomical landmarks. It's like you're unlocking like this mm-hmm. hidden world, and then you know where to cut without hurting someone.
Right.
And you go to the next level, and then you have to clean that all out, find everything. And once you've found all the things and put them into your viewport in a way, clean them up, making sure you're not hurting anything that you could hurt that's very vital to survival, then you get to cut to the next level. So like it's kind of almost like illustrating, mm-hmm. you know, I don't know if the analogy there is, it's not perfect, but it's definitely a certain unique way of illustrating right. something. Mm-hmm. You got to be really aware of what they're concerned about. Mm-hmm. You know, they're like, oh, hypogastric, you know, this is very important, or this nerve or this vessel. Oh, if you nick that, that's the end, you know? And so,
yeah.
Yeah.
So, it's important. Yeah. So, okay. I'm just trying to piece this together now for someone listening.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm throwing a lot of stuff at you.
No, it's good. This is like a ton of information that
it's a lot of information.
I did not know, but so you're a person who is good at drawing. You have a love for it, a passion for it. You're maybe not into, you like representational art, right?
Yeah.
So, and you have an appreciation or a love for science, biology, things like that. And maybe you like to travel and maybe you don't mind.
You can do it from anywhere.
Right. Yeah. So, so I'm just trying to paint the picture of who's the person that this is perfect for. And then what do they do? Do they have to go through one of these programs? Can they be self-taught? Can they, do they need to have a biology degree or, you know, pre-med or something like that? Like what would, let's chart that course and then, and kind of see where someone can go from, you know, maybe a high school student listening or someone in college listening to being Mesa Schumacher.
Absolutely. And, you know, honestly, the best thing you can do if like, and I feel a little bit like people who are kind of drawn to science are mm-hmm. kind of know who they are. Like mm-hmm. it either hits or it doesn't in a way.
I guarantee there's a handful of people listening to this right now. They're just like,
and I'm talking to you out there. Yeah.
This is
you
for me.
Who is out there, you know, drawing beetles right now. Someone who's very interested in understanding and representing the world around them, mm-hmm. who is, you know, who has an attention for detail and for explaining things in their own mind, making sense of things and has a curiosity. for understanding how things work. Kind of the founder of my practice, I guess, the guy who founded the Hopkins program, Max Bradle, he said, you know, you can't draw something unless you understand it. And I think we know that as artists, you do have to understand something on a very form level before you can draw it. And in science art, you got to understand the system or what you're trying to convey before you can draw it. So if you like puzzles, visual puzzles in a way, this might be for you. And if you're in high school or in college, if you're in high school, you're really lucky. And sometimes I get high schoolers talking to me and that's awesome. Like you're so ahead of the game. There's actually a couple of undergrad programs you can go to. And I'm not going to know them all. There's one very long lived one in Iowa, at Iowa State, that a lot of people go to, and they come out and they just have a bachelor's and they work. And, usually in natural science and some medical, there's an RIT program, that is medical. They don't have cadaver dissection, but that's pretty much the only thing they don't have. So they have a little bit less medical and clinical interaction than the grad schools, but they produce illustrators who work without a master's very successfully, and they're great. So if you're in high school, like those are some options right away. And some of those people go, especially from Iowa, a lot of those people will go, and it's kind of a feeder program to grad schools. And then there's a couple of other programs that they kind of pop up and disappear. So I think there's one in Augusta now, Georgia. I might be wrong about that, for natural science as well, undergrad. But you can also go to art school or you can go and get a bio degree. Most people who enter this field went to one of those and then kind of supplemented the other one. So I got a physical anthropology degree. But I had BioCore, I had a lot of biology courses, I had, you know, developmental bio, molecular, all these things. And then I for a long time, I taught myself online the art portion. I took a couple courses. And then I went back and I did a graduate certificate program in natural science illustration at the University of Washington, which is no longer in existence. But there's a couple of those around. So that's another option. And they'll teach you how to conventions and things, and they'll teach you how to represent things more, realistically. And they're doing a better job of more digital, these days than they were when I went. And then I supplemented my fine art or, you know, my traditional art skills with, atelier schools. So I went to Gage Academy in Seattle for a bit. I didn't do an atelier, but I just took a lot of courses. And I showed up to figure drawing all the time and just did a lot of hanging out there, drawing all the time. I kind of like pieced together my career and then I did a couple internships and that was really helpful, you know, to get the mentorship of people who are working in the field and that to kind of network. I feel like to make it, you need art skills, right? You need art fundamentals. You need some skill, some technical skill, and some aptitude, I suppose. You need some science knowledge. You need some communication skills. So to be able to talk to people in science and understand what they're saying, and then to communicate that. So learning how to kind of bridge that gap visually is very helpful. A little bit of business skills if you're going into freelance. A little less, I guess, if you're going into an institution, but it certainly doesn't hurt. And then, of course, a network, just like you would gain anywhere. So if you're going to get that from art school, that's great. If you're going to get that from a grad school, that's great. Or you can go and join an organization. Our two kind of main organizations are the GNSI, the Guild of Natural Science Illustrators, which is kind of more education and a little bit more watercolor in the woods. And a lot of scientists join as well. And but it's for education. It's a nonprofit for education. And then my professional guild is, or professional organization, I guess, is the Association of Medical Illustrators. And that, actually anyone can join as a trial member for, I believe it's free for a year. So we have some students, you know, just checking it out. And, there's a mentorship program. I'm a mentor, you know, you get hooked up with someone and like, you get to just talk with them about it and what your goals might be and connects you with working artists. And so it's great to connect with those two. That's the first thing I did. I went and I talked to people and I was like, well, what do you actually do? And what does one need to know? And
right.
Some artists like had me into their workspace and they said, hey, look, come on into the hospital. Look at me. I'm doing a knee surgery. Check it out. And other people were really generous with their time, just sending me emails or talking to me on the phone and saying, well, okay, where are you at? And what do you need to do? And they told me learn digital art like yesterday. And that was one of the best pieces of advice I ever got. Cause then I was in college, you know, after courses, I'd go to the computer lab and they happened to have Photoshop and I would just do that. And I'd go on lynda.com at the time, now LinkedIn Learning, and just, you know,
svslearn.com.
Yeah. And now I'm doing this, like, forever student, right? Actually, coming on SBS is fun because I'm bad at this. So I'm getting to do something I'm bad at, which is always kind of fun, right?
So how important is having a website, having social media, those types of things to this sort of career?
Yeah, I think it's a little less important to be a social media mogul in this career. I'm not great on social media. I mostly hang out on Twitter, I guess, because I like, there's a lot of my industry people are there. Art directors in my field are there. Scientists are there, you know, infographics artists are hanging out there. So I feel like the conversations are better for me there than Instagram. I hate Instagram. I really hate it. But I also like am way late to the game on Instagram. I just refused for so long to partake that I missed out on like the Wild West. And now there's no getting in now.
Well, it's changed so much lately too. I was just looking at it this morning. I'm like, I'm not enjoying this app right now.
I like their visual layout, and that is literally the only thing I like about it, you know.
Yeah.
And but like if you're gonna go look at someone's portfolio, it's kind of the best one, right?
Right. Yeah, that's true.
But I actually have a love for LinkedIn these days. I get a lot of work off of LinkedIn. So I've been doing kind of a pretty aggressive ad campaign in the last year. It's important as you grow, but you certainly don't need to be on it to be a very successful science artist.
So, and those jobs then, where are they coming from?
I mean, a lot of people work in-house, and there's more and more in-house jobs I've been seeing lately. A lot are in-house remote as well now. I have a ton of colleagues and friends who are working for companies across the country, never go into the office, fully employed, very happy salaries. And there's going to be more and more of that. I've been doing it for years myself, but during the pandemic, it's just like exploded the amount of people who are willing to work with me remote on larger contracts. So that's only going to get more, you know, for everybody, I think, but definitely for medical, because medical, it's like suddenly everyone realized you want expertise, but you can't entice someone to come out to Kentucky or something and you're not willing to put them up. And like, so how do you get that? Well, they'll work for you online. It's fine.
What about representation? Do you have a rep to help you get the jobs, or do you just have you developed these relationships over time that.
I don't have a rep. I do all my own, I do my own stuff, which is kind of exhausting, right? But
you keep all the money.
to keep all the money. And I honestly, I've been kind of considering hiring like an admin person or something recently. I've been like doing a little bit of subcontracting out of admin work, and like assistant work, which is great. I love that. I want to delegate more. I'm like learning how to delegate later in my career here. And I'm loving it. It's the best thing I've ever done. But it's hard to find someone who can sell your specific skills in that. Like I have kind of a pitch that I've developed over time, you know, that I feel like works pretty well when I get someone on the phone and I just, you know, I'd really have to like, I'd have to find someone who knows exactly all the things I do. So I'm always trying to recruit my husband, but he's not having it. Not Maybe someday if he gets fed up with his job.
I'm along the line of income.
But some people do have reps, I should say. Some people have reps. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
what are the opportunities for like passive income here? Can you license your illustrations out? Is that a viable option? Is that a thing people do?
Yeah, I would say, I'm trying to think of our last, like we were like an industry survey. I think maybe 10% of people make some sort of significant portion on licensing. Mm-hmm. I do a little bit of licensing and I make a little bit of money off of it, but it's not my main focus. But okay. There's like all the charts, you know, all the charts you see and and stuff like that. Some people own those and they've been making money off of those for years.
Mm, right.
You know, there was a big company actually called the Anatomical Chart Company that made all those. They're all like a bunch of them were done in airbrush back in the day. You can tell next time you go to your doctor's office, like see if you can tell if it was airbrush or if it was a later edition digital.
Right.
But there's a bunch of still working medical artists who are involved in those. But then a couple of people own the rights and they license them all over the world.
That's cool.
As well as fell prints. You know.
So you're in Fiji. Why are you in Fiji?
Nothing to do with me, but my husband is a diplomat. So he represents the U.S. for econ for Fiji and the surrounding island countries here.
Okay.
Kiribati, Tonga, Vanuatu, and Tuvalu. Oh,
did you feel the volcano?
So it was insane. First of all, I will say that was a crazy event. Anyone who doesn't, I think everyone is aware of the Tonga volcano at this point.
Crazy.
I was making dinner. I was making dinner and my kids were running around. And I have a one-year-old, almost two, and a four-year-old. And we just come in from the back, like the backyard. And suddenly I heard what I thought sounded like rolling thunder, but it also was kind of shaking the ground. And my back door blew open.
Whoa.
The blast blew open my back door.
Whoa.
Over, I think, God, we're like 500 plus miles away.
Oh my gosh.
And my son, the one-year-old, he said, "Oh, ooh, volcano."
He just knew.
He thinks everything is volcano. So we were like, "Yeah, right, Dune. Here you go again, crying volcano." But he was right for once. He was right. Like when it rains here, he's like, "Oh, volcano."
Yeah. Yeah.
Thunder. But
it's like a broken clock is right, twice a day or whatever.
Once in his life, he felt a real volcano.
That's amazing. So did you have to deal with any sort of swells or anything? Okay.
We had a little bit of tsunami, but like the tsunami was tiny. Apparently Fiji doesn't get that many tsunamis. I think it's because we have so many reef here. I'm new to the country, so I haven't really explored as much as I would normally like because we've got little kids, so we're kind of a little locked down right now.
Can I give you my knowledge on tsunami? From what I understand, it's the places that have a shallow seafloor that where the wave can really stand up.
That's
high.
True, yeah.
So if it's deep around, you know, the islands, the wavelength has to go from the ocean floor all the way to the surface, and it just can't be as big if anyway.
Yeah, that's, well, I think that's the case here. We're pretty like, we got, I guess one of the outer islands got hit with a pretty big one, and I think Vanuatu got some. Luckily, there has not been a lot of death. Mm-hmm. So this really lucky. We had such a huge event, and it mostly, you know, most people in Tonga got to safety and they're rebuilding. So, but it was pretty wild.
Wow.
I have two more questions. I think we'll, unless you have something else, Will, I think we'll call it good.
Got through mine.
Number one, who are the rock stars in medical illustration that like we should know about besides yourself?
I honestly don't have an answer for that. Because people do such, like every time I get to go to a conference, I go to a couple days and I've like do a little bit of like fetal position in my room for a while because people are doing such cool stuff that I go back and I'm like, I'm becoming irrelevant. I have to learn more stuff. It's just like, cause some people are working in, you know, people are working in interactives. People are working in surgical 3D teaching. Mm-hmm. People are
AR too, I'm sure.
People. Yeah. Yeah. VR. It just, and people are working with surgeons to make better implants, you know, to go in the body. People are doing such cool stuff. It's so hard to say, you know, who's at the top of their game. Cause I feel like people are just killing it in all their little niches. Actually, I should say it's such a collaborative field. It's really, it's, I mean, everyone's competitive. Like, is it possible to make it as an illustrator if you're not somewhat of a competitive person?
Right. Yeah.
I don't think it is. Like, you have to have some sort of drive, right? Like, I mean, this is what I'm willing to suffer for is art. Right. I wasn't willing to suffer for research biology, but I'm willing to suffer for this. Right. Right.
Where's your pain tolerance for a particular thing? And that's where you know you need art, to like, yeah.
It's like through the roof, but for other things, less so.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. That's interesting. That's interesting.
I totally forgot what we were talking about.
It's just who the rock stars are.
Oh yeah, it
means that she's one of them, Jake. If she can't name
them, well, I feel like
people are really but like just to harp on kind of the collaborative nature. I guess when COVID started, my people in my industry immediately banded together on like our in-house hubs. And put together Google Docs where we all just dumped information that we were getting from our clients. And we worked together on stuff. And people would say, I'm looking for more information on the connections of the spike protein for this. And someone else is saying, this research group is doing this. And here's the research that they're sharing with us. And we're putting. And so we were like, everyone is working together on this to make this better. Because we're all trying to get everything right and get it out. And people are working on, you know, patient stuff. People are working on researcher publications that are pushing things forward. People and everyone is just like, the document suddenly grew to like 100 pages long, and you just, with all these annotated things, and it's just, and some of the people working on it were just working on it for fun. Like some people didn't even have a client. They're just like, I have some spare time and I want to just dive into this. And that is just like, I just have the most awesome colleagues in a way.
That's cool.
Really cool people and always willing to help. You know, if I have trouble with a 3D animation that I'm working on, I can go on various lists and say, hey, blah, 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 blah. And someone might even take a look at my file and fix it for me. Like, it's just, like, amazing. I just don't know if that exists in other areas of illustration in the same way.
It's, well, I know in the animation industry, there is that competitive thing can really come into play where people don't want to share files, don't want to share techniques, don't, you know. Luckily, at where I was at Blue Sky, everyone was pretty open. And it's like, oh, yeah, here, let me show you how I do that. Here's my brush or whatever. But I've heard other studios, it's like, I'm not going to, this is my technique. I don't want to give you an edge. Okay, last question, and nothing to do with, it's more on the travel thing. You mentioned you went to Turkey, and did you make it over to Göbekli Tepe and check out that archaeological site?
So I worked with people who worked on that one. I was at
Çatalhöyük. Which one?
Çatalhöyük.
Oh.
Çatalhöyük, but Çatalhöyük. It's got like a million different little annotations on.
Right.
It's spelled like C-A-T-A-L-Y. I'm going to mess it up. But kind of, if you type that in, you'll find it. But it's a really cool site. Kind of a post-modern archaeological hub. But Turkey's got some great archaeology.
It does.
I got to do a little bit of touring to different sites.
Okay.
But yeah. I didn't make it there, sadly.
All right. Well, I think that's it. That's it for us.
Yeah. Why did you ask, Jake?
I'm fascinated by Göbekli Tepe. I think
Did you listen to Graham Nash? Have you listened to him talk about it?
I have listened to him talk about it, but more so, it just when I first
spread on that.
Yeah.
But Fernando did. That was Fernando's work.
Right.
And he built that. He built a little model. He's all about like model building and stop motion.
I saw his, he like posted about it and he's like, here's everything that went into this. And I was like, dang, this is so cool.
He's just a monster of work. That's we'll have a him come on. You should. He's very personable about these things. He's like, he's awesome. And he's helped so many. He's so nice to like artists entering the field. He gave me my first big job. I will always be grateful. He was like, cool. I came into work one day. I'm, you know, like the intern. He's like, I think I have a job for you. Bring your portfolio quick. You know?
Wow.
I have to get his contact info from you.
Yeah. I'm sure he'd love to. He's very, very sharing with art. And he does fantastic work. So.
All right. Well, thank you, Mesa.
Well, thank you guys.
This was good.
Yeah.
We will never let Lee bag on medical illustration again.
Never again.
Thank you. And well, I hope, I don't know. I hope some people, you know, out there listening are kind of, this hits home for you. And if so, come find us because we'd love to talk to you. But thank you guys. Thanks for extending the offer to have me on after I bashed you in the comments.
It's all good.
No, I really like the work you guys do in that. I love that you're so honest. So keep it up. You touch on a lot of stuff I feel like young illustrators really should know. Mm-hmm. And I love your kind of your business focus and stuff too. Cause it's just, I mean, I work alone in a studio and I've like made every mistake in the book and gone through every like client disaster and, been sad over learning how to do finances and setting up businesses and websites and blah, blah, blah. And it's a lot of stuff, but you know, it's nice to have community out there and hear that other people are going through the same things. So, cool. Keep doing the good work, guys.
All right.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
We'll see ya.
Yeah, bye.
I totally, feel like this could have been a career path for me. Had I known about it. Maybe not so much medical, but definitely archaeological, paleontology, anything National Geographic, like
let you draw a dinosaur once a month and you're happy.
Yeah, pretty much.
I have amongst to. The and other I, things that you'd have to do that you wouldn't
I have
like
this
as much.
In front of me at all times. I just love my little
for those T-Rex. That are watching on YouTube, you can see that he's holding up a what kind of dinosaur is that? A T-Rex?
This is a T-Rex. It's the most anatomically correct T-Rex model that I've seen for sale on this level. This is like a museum. They said it's a museum grade toy, I guess.
Is the smell museum grade? I mean, did they get that accurate?
They did. It smells just like a T-Rex did.
Smell like rubber.
Years ago. Yeah. All right. Thank you for joining us. 3-Point Perspective is made by is made possible by svslearn.com, where Becoming a Great Illustrator starts. Your hosts have been Will Terry, Jake Parker, and Lee White. Again, Lee White couldn't make it today. He is out on assignment, but you could find Will Terry's work at willterry.com and all over on Instagram at willterryart. Lee White can be found at leewhiteillustration.com and over on Instagram at leewhiteillo. And I'm over at mrjakeparker.com and on Instagram at jakeparker. Podcast produced by Daniel Tu. You can find his work at daniel2.co. That's tuc.co. Special thanks to Master of Production, David Bro, Keeper of the Curriculum, Austin Shirtliff, Chief Operations Officer, Lisa Fott, and a thank you to Lily Howell for our show notes. Now, go draw something.